This is Alistair Greenhill sitting with James Fairclough at his home in Mill Close, Burwell, on the 28th of May 2014. And we're going to be talking about his life as a resident of Burwell. So, James, if we could start, if you could perhaps give me your full name, date of birth, and where you were born.
Right. My full name, James Delanoy Sabberton Fairclough. It's quite a mouthful. My birthday, 25th of May, just had it. I was born in Burwell, where I've lived all my life, apart from business and one or two other stays away for, well, 2 years was the most, when I was away from Burwell.
And what year were you born?
I was born in 1933. And as I say, I've lived in Burwell all my life. Burwell is nothing like what it was when I was born. It's now completely different. But I will start not at my birth, but as soon after my birth as I can. And as I go through, I'll try and introduce changes in Burwell, which I've known happen. And some good, some not so good, and we'll see how it goes. I suppose the first thing I ought to say is that my schooling started in the normal Burwell school, just down the road from where I am now living. I've only lived in two houses all my life in Burwell. One on Swaffham Road, where I was born, my parents' house, and when I got married, we bought a house in Burwell, and that was the second house, of course, where I'm living now, and age 81. I went to the local school in Burwell, which was, I suppose you could say, a typical village school at that time. And I managed to pass the 11 plus exam. And that took me to Soham Grammar School, which is, 4 or 5 miles away from Burwell, I suppose. And was a very good school. It's all completely different now, of course. And so I spent my time from 11 to 18 there, actually. 11 to 16 on the normal course. And then I took what was then the school certificate and is now some other name. And then I did a further 2 years to take me to 18, which was for a high school certificate, which I duly got. And my skill lay with science, really, at that time. And I was planning to become sort of an engineer, electrical engineer, or that sort of thing. So I should also mention that I was one of the leaders of weekly boarding at this school at Soham, which I joined when I was about 14. The headmaster, a nice chap, very nice chap, and his house was a big house, and he decided that he'd like to do some boarding of his boys, but not full time. He wanted to keep the parents' influence. And so what we did, I was one of the first eight, as I say, at the age of 14, roughly, to become a weekly boarder. And that meant, of course, I got the bus from home at Burwell to Soham on Monday mornings, spent the week there and came back on Friday afternoons. And that was an experience for me, because it was the first time I was away from home. And it taught me a lot about life, that weekly boarding. One of the things at Soham School, which is most likely at a lot of schools, is the interest in sports, and I was hopeless. The only sport at which I had any really success, if you like, was cross-country running, and that was only a mild success. But at least I didn't make my fool of myself. It's cross-country running, like I did playing football and cricket, scoring an old goal because I got the wrong goalpost by mistake, you know, the sort of thing. So that taught me a lot. And as I say, at the age of 18, what did James want to do next? It wasn't what James wanted to do next. It was what the army wanted to do next, or in fact the Air Force, National Service.
But perhaps just before we go into National Service, could I just take you back a little bit?
Certainly.
And perhaps ask what your father did?
Indeed. My father was a fruit grower in Burwell. He owned 6 orchards in various parts of Burwell, none of which now exist. They spread down the village from the top end right down to the bottom end. And he made his living with that and some flower growing as well. He was a small farmer, you know, smallholder. And that earned him a living until such time as after the war, when the war finished, about 1946-47, everything's changed, and all of the fruit, a lot of it came from abroad as the markets got into bringing stuff back after the war, and it didn't pay, and one after another those orchards were sold. Some of them in the middle of the village were made into housing estates. The more isolated ones were just sold as farmland and the trees were dug up. One of them was by the Burwell Load, a very nice orchard. I used to go down there in the summer and fish by the side of the river and grab the odd apple. And there was one interesting thing. I was down there, I would be 12, went into the orchard, came back eating an apple. 2 fishermen, one of them looked at me and said, "Been bloody scubaing, have you?" I said, "My father owns this orchard and you should have seen his face." So I did that.
Did your father ever have you helping him in the orchard?
Absolutely. Oh, half the village, well, not half the village, every August, September time, apple picking, plum picking, and we had a lot of village people come and do casual work, and that taught me a lot as well about managing people, and he also had a cold storage plant down in Burwell Fen, which during the war was hijacked by the government and stored vast amounts of cheese, but it was really built for apples. And when the war ended, it went back to apples. But that again began to lose money. So really, all he could do was sell up, which he did. And he still kept his farming to the extent of flowers and a very small fruit orchard, but the main apples just went. There was no market really. So what I should also say at this point is getting on to one of my major hobbies, railways. Our local station, as I said, on a branch line, Cambridge to Mildenhall, 3 passenger trains each way every day, and a couple of goodses. And I found my way into the signal box. And one particular man was very friendly to me, and I started to pull the levers, give the drivers their tickets to give them the authority to travel on to the next station. And that really was my main hobby at that time. And it went on for 2 or 3 years at least, or a bit more actually, till I got into my senior school and found I hadn't got the time to spare going round trains. And of course I got on engine rides with the drivers and in the guards van with the guards. These were on passenger trains. And nobody seemed to worry if a boy of about 12 pulled the levers. Nobody said, "Oh, are you sure you know what you're doing?" And, I learned a lot there too on discipline, because trains have to be handled with absolute discipline. And, you can't have two trains running towards each other on the same line. Not that that could happen with all the safety precautions and interlocks there are on the railway system. It's very difficult, if you use the system as it should be used, to have trains hit each other. I won't go into any details, but the way the system works is that certain levers can't be pulled when pulling them would do something naughty. So I was safe enough, really. I mean, there was always people at the sales, a signalman around, or the station master. Once I was coming onto the track, I had got the stuff from the driver, his token that I wanted to bring up to the signal box, and the train had chuffed away. I walked up to the signal box, opened the door, and who should be sitting there was the local Bobby. And I said, "Hello." I can remember this ever so clearly. I said, "Hello," and he just looked at me. So I had with me you could call it a flag, if you like. It wasn't a flag, from Fordham to Burwell, which I promptly put where I should, up on the wall in the little slot. And he just looked. But he obviously thought he knows what he's doing. It's not just come to mess around. I then made signals both sides to Cambridge and to Bottisham and Fordham, flung a few levers up and down, and he didn't say a thing. And just then the proper signalman came up. Now, what he said to that proper signalman when I'd left the box, I've no idea. I should say that when I met the policeman, the signalman was around as well. That just gives you a happy time of my life. I was there at 6:30 in the morning sometimes. But as I say, once I got a little bit older, that faded away. Although all my life I have been incredibly interested in railways, and I was lucky, and I'll come to this later, during my work to be able to travel a lot on the British railways at the firm's expense.
I'm going to take you back and ask a couple more questions about your younger life.
Yes, sure.
One I always like to ask is, do you remember your grandparents?
I do. I remember my father's grandfather and mother, and also the mother on my mother's side. The father had died quite a while earlier. The father's grandparents lived in Burwell, very close to where we lived at the time. So, of course, I was in great contact with them. He was a fruit grower, of course, and Dad took over from him. And he was also a county councillor. He was quite an important man, actually. I got on very well with them. On the mother's...
Do you remember his name?
It was James Fairclough. I'm the sixth great James Fairclough. No, my son is the sixth James Fairclough. I'm the fifth. Because he was a fruit grower, you see, and Dad followed on him, and then it followed on to me, the James name. So I got on well with them, and on Mother's side, they lived in Newmarket. So they, again, were fairly close, or she was, and she had a housekeeper, you'd call her, I suppose, a sort of lifelong companion would perhaps be the best word to describe her. So that's where I was with my grandparents.
And also, can you remember what the Burwell village looked like when you were young, about the time when you were doing the trains and things?
Well, it was very different from it is now. In a way, it was nicer, in a way. But I don't know. You could say it's certainly much more organised now. We had one doctor then, we now have six. We've always had good stores for getting household stuff. We've got three at the moment, good ones, and one or two special and several specialist stores. I think probably the roads have altered. The railway's gone, of course, which is a great blow to me. And the buses are not as many as they were. Well, most people have got cars. But the main difference is, of course, it's got huge. It's over 5,000 population now. And it's a different village. Mm-hmm. At some point, and it ought to perhaps start now, I should say that railways is my number two event at that time, because church came first. Now, I've always been musical, and I've sung in the church choir since I was about eight. And as my life goes on, and I tell you about later on, you'll see that church has a very large input to it. But at that time, I was in the church choir. And
Which church?
This is St Mary's Burwell. I have seen seven vicars through my time. I may say something about one or two of them as we go through. But at that time, I just sang in the choir and didn't do anything else. And that carried on until I was 16, when I suddenly decided I wanted to learn to play the organ. As I say, I've always been musical, done a little piano. And at school, I even did a bit of violin, but that stopped very quickly. It didn't make enough noise for me, the violin. So piano, and then organ from 16 onwards. Now, of course, as you'll see when I go on to my next phase, which is 2 years national service, the organ had to be modified, but I still played now and again. So church, which I will illuminate on as we go through, is my number one, and always has been, occupation apart from work. Railways came second, and another one which I'll mention later is writing. Done a little writing in my time. Not fiction, I'm hopeless, but non-fiction. I've had some publications. Anyway, that's later. So at 18, the dreaded note from the government appeared. National service. I had to register. I then had a medical. I was grade 2, not grade one. I was hoping they'd grade me so low they didn't want me. Anyway, I was grade two. And so I went home, told the parents, I shall have to do it. I'm only went as low as grade two. And the day came, 26th of September, 1951. Never forget that day. Down to Burwell Station, catch a train up to Padgate, which, for those who don't know, it's probably most of you, it's near Warrington in Lancashire, where poor National Service people went to begin their 2 years. Long train journey, which interested me no end, changing at Bletchley. And then when I got to Padgate to the Warrington station, there was a huge truck full of very unhappy looking chaps. And I joined this and we went to Padgate, a few miles, where my National Service really began. As someone said to me, and I forget who, you were lucky, James, you'd been away from home before. Your weekly boarding. Some of the lads, it was their first night away from home. And you could tell they didn't like it. I, of course, being used to that, it didn't bother me too much. So we had a week at Padgate where we were kitted out and told all sorts of rules and regulations and things. And then I went to Hednesford, which is a bit nearer home. It's near Cannock, I would say. Anyone who knows Cannock, you're near Hednesford. And that was for eight weeks, basic training. And my word, it was basic. Drill was something I was utterly hopeless at. I did my best. In fact, the sergeant, I heard him say to his corporal who was in charge of my drill, he tries, it's not being awkward, he's trying, he just can't. And for that reason, I wasn't punished. I was in fact allowed off the final passing out parade where everyone had to be very smart to become the billet orderly for the day. That excused me the prying at the passing out parade. Anyway, that passed through, and it wasn't pleasant. It was darned hard work, and we had to keep the billet spotless. And we had inspections once or twice a week and all that sort of thing. But again, I learnt a lot. I learnt how to meet more with people of the age of 18, 20, one or two older ones who had been to university, and we're about 25, 26, you know, a few of those around, but most of us were about 18 and made some pals. But of course, then we all split again after 8 weeks. And they said, how would you like to spend your 2 years? And I said, well, I'm mechanically minded. I said, I would like to do something in the engineering. And I was lucky. I was made a radar operator. And that's fine. Later on, you'll hear how that helped me in my future career. So there was me, radar operator, 6 weeks down at a place, Yatesbury, which is way down in, somewhere down southwest of England. A six-week course there. And that was utterly different from Hednesford. There was much less bull, much more on the technical side, much more interesting. And you were with people who were more technically in-minded than I was. Than I was at Hednesford. So I did my radar course, passed that. And then the question was, where would I end up? I had a nasty feeling there that I might be sent to somewhere like Egypt or Singapore. Not at all a happy thought. So I could have been put in this country, Britain, but I ended up in Germany. And that was, I think I can say, I spent nearly 18 months there, that I did enjoy that. We were very lucky. We had lovely billets. We had excellent food. And the work was incredibly interesting. I was, for a time, within 20 miles of the Iron Curtain, looking at Russian planes through radar to make sure they didn't straggle out of their... I should say looking at Britain planes in radar, seeing they didn't struggle out of their zones, which they were allowed to go to Berlin and back. Very interesting. And I learnt a lot there as well, of course, of discipline. And because by this time, of course, I was getting on for 20 years old. And in fact, it was 21 when I came... No, 20 when I came out, that's right. So I was, and from there, it was so easy to get home. I mean, there were trains every other day, special military trains from Holland to Britain. And I got my home leaves, which I wouldn't have done if I'd gone a lot further afield. Nothing like as many home leaves. So I can honestly say I enjoyed that time and learnt a lot. So then, at the end of 2 years, I had to start thinking again. I had to... Oh, they did. They wanted me to stay in the RAF. And I had a very good discharge certificate. They thought a lot of me, obviously, because I'd actually, you know, done a heck of a lot there in terms of... keeping the system going. I mean, looking after other people, although I only got I never became a corporal, but if the hint was dropped that if I signed on, I'd be made a corporal pretty quickly. I was below that rank, but I had contract to deal with other people. And so and they were obviously happy with me. So that would have become good when I... looked for references for my civilian job. However, things took a very nice turn for me. I've been incredibly lucky in my life. About 2 months before I demobbed, Dad got on to me. I'm not sure whether he rang me or whether when I was at home. And he said, I've been drinking in the local pub with a chap who might be interested in taking you on. I won't mention the bloke's name, but he worked for Pye in Cambridge. I say worked, he was nearly the top rung. And Dad was talking to him in the pub. You see, this is how my life's been. And he said, you must meet him because I think you could work there. So... when I came home on a short leave, he said, you must meet the chap. So I went and met him. And he asked me a few questions. I said, oh, I've been doing radar. I said, I'm, you know, learning and I want to go in this sort of business. And he said, well, he said, he did a lot of government work, his department for Pye. And he said, I could use you. He said, you come and meet Mr. X, who you'll be working for, and I will tell him I've taken you on, but he ought to ask a few questions formally, you know. So I met Mr. X, and we got on well. And so I started there in September 1953. And I... was put on various jobs, which I won't go into detail, but...
When you said started there, which site?
I was at the main Cambridge Pye site, and there I spent quite a number of years. Quite a number of months, sorry, before I was moved to the telecommunications site, which was on the Newmarket Road. It's all gone now, of course. And there I took my base. And travelling, I did quite a lot of travelling. I did abroad, I did a trip to Belgium, and I think it was three to Germany, working for PIE, doing various work. And then back in this country, I did some work up north. And that was my second main long term away from home. I was based near Carlisle, and I was doing a job there for some people. I can't go into any detail, but it lasted a year anyway. And I got home once a month on leave, so I didn't do too badly. Then I transferred to where I spent a lot of time on mobile radio systems. And
sorry, can I interrupt?
Just stop me.
Before going on to mobile radio systems, so when you joined PIE, was that an apprenticeship, or did you go straight into
working? I went straight in with my Army, RAF, and also I didn't officially have anything to do with the Army, but we crossed. With the RAF discharge and the fact that I'd done well there on mobile radar.
And what was your... were you an electronics engineer or a mechanical engineer?
I was electronics. I was electronics. And towards the end of the my working life, my working life was much the same all the way through, in the sense that I was doing various electronic jobs, and that went on until basically I retired. The last 10 years were different, though. I was with them for 38 years. That's a long time. It wouldn't happen today, I wouldn't think, for many people. But the last 10 years, I was more on the management side. I gave up the technicals, and I was a quotations controller, which meant that if I didn't get the quote out on time, the salesman had bashed me on the head. So I did that. And I think what I'm going to have to do now is to go back and discuss my church events a little more. Unless you'd rather I did that as a separate thing later.
Well, since we're talking about PIE, you sort of jumped to the last 10 years. Could we perhaps just cover what you did at PIE? You said electronics. Was it, perhaps describe a little more, was it electronics design?
I can certainly tell you that. It was design. I was the chap who, when a salesman said, "I've got an order," plonk, I had to sit down and think, how the hell are we going to put this right, put this through? And it was that. But not the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. The last 10 years, I was non-technical. I was managerial from the time I was 48 to 58 when I won't say I retired, because they did ask me to leave, but at 58 I was very happy to. They were cutting down on staff, you see. And I was happy to go at 58. And but the last 10 years, well, I was a paper boy. I had to get quotes assembled and all the things I didn't have to do before. I was technical and just said, this is what I want. And someone else had put it all together. But the last 10 years, I did the putting together.
So when you were doing design work, that was on mobile radio?
A lot of it was.
A lot of it?
Yeah.
A lot of it was. Are there any kind of public product names that you remember working on?
Oh, I did a lot of work for water boards, electric. That was quite interesting. If you took one water board job, which was somewhere in the West Country, I honestly forget where. I went and learned a lot about water supply. And when I did a job for the electricity people up in Birmingham, I learned a lot about electricity supply. It was fascinating, you know, hearing, seeing how all these other systems worked. And what.
So when you said you did a job for them, what was it? Was the job installing a mobile radio system?
No, I didn't install.
We had
separate people for installing, which suited me because my bit clumsy with the hands, you know. But now I had to tell them what to install. Let me take a system and go through it in a little more detail. Then a salesman would ring me up and say, "I've got customer X who's interested in a mobile radio system," and if it was a job of some significance, then I would meet customer X. If it was a small routine thing, that wouldn't be necessary. So, assuming it was an electricity board, I would go and meet the people, make notes, say, "This is what you want." Some of them, it was fascinating because some produced long specifications, all written out and, you know, pages of the thing, which all had to be answered clause by clause. Others would just say, "What I want is someone..." Someone who just says, "I want a system which will let me talk to my men getting peas up in the field." Mm-hmm. And you know, and that was it. That's all you were told. It was up to you to make it work. So, and various things in between, of course. So I would then design the system. And it would be, I'm assuming you got the order... it would be built and tested, and then our installers would install. And that's how it worked.
So from my understanding, it was you were doing system design.
That's right, most of my life.
Opposed to, say, circuit design.
Yes, you've hit it.
Yeah, yes.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I did the system as a whole, which would have little bits in which other people had... designed, yes. Yeah.
And you can see that I'm thinking this is very useful for the pipe project as well as Purple.
Yeah, well, as I say, that's what I did for most of my time. And then, of course, when I retired... I have to say that I've never been looking for something to do. In all my retirement, which is over 20 years now, I've always been busy doing something or other, which, when I come on to my next hobby, which is writing, you will see what quite a bit of my time during a certain period of my life was spent. I think what I should do now is just give you a little more of my church back and bring that up to the same point, shall I, when I'm a 50, 60.
Feel free, yeah.
Going back to the RAF, when I came out of the RAF, and I did manage a bit of playing the organ in the RAF, both here and in Germany. So I kept myself slightly in practice, but only slightly. And then when I came back after my RAF training, when in my sort of mid-20s, I started playing the organ for services. And so I then became eventually a deputy organist. And then for 22 years... I was actual organist, not choir master. I've never been choir master. Again, it's not real. I've taken choir practices when the choir master's been away or holiday or ill or something, but I've never actually been that officially because that isn't really what my ambitions and and methods are really what I wanted. I wanted to play the organ. So I did that for, well, say over 20 years full time. And then when I was 70, I gave that up. I sing now. I play the piano once a month for a little service in Burwell for the old folk, in their old folks' home. I do that. But the rest of it is singing. So that's brought me up to date on that. And then I come to my writing, which started, I would think, when I was mid-60s, and went on for about 10 years and then stopped for various reasons. Mainly I'd got other more things to do. And writing, I went on a course. It was a correspondence course, very good one. And I started writing, and I thought, well, let's try writing a story. That was a waste. I just cannot write fiction. I've tried, I've sent it off, got very polite but very firm replies saying, perhaps you'd like to try writing non-fiction. So I tried non-fiction and got on much better. And I've had articles published in railway magazines, music magazines, the things I know a bit about. And but then that too got to the point where I thought, well, I've done this, but I'd like to, give it a break. So I gave it a break. And unfortunately, at that time, I had a lot of family problems with health. My dad and mum died for a start, which was very sad, of course, in the 70s. And I mean 1970s, they were older age-wise. And several aunts on both sides of our families needed a lot of attention. So that more or less took over and kept me occupied for quite some years, one way and another, because it, it was a lot to do. And then, of course, what I haven't mentioned, and this is very important, is my son, who was born, he's 42 now. He lives in Stamford, married, been married about 10 or 12 years, and he works for the local council. And, of course, looking after him through my life. And he too was mad on railways. We did some lovely trips together. One classic one was where we tried to do every London tube station, every London main line station in a day. The terminals, of course, not the intermediate stations. Like Euston, St Pancras, King's Cross, Liverpool Street. We did them all but one, and we just could not manage that one. So he and I had some lovely railway trips, and he's still very interested in railways. And so that they're married, they live, as I say, in Stamford, so we... they're not too far away. And we got on very well together. And I never actually went to university. You may have noticed that. When I came out of the RAF, this job came plonk. And I didn't need to go to university. He's dead lucky. My son went to university, got a grade 2A or whatever they call it, and his wife works for the Inland Revenue at Leicester. And she's well qualified too, so they get on all right. So we've got to the point now where I'm doing various little things. I've nothing really major on except the church. One of the problems there, why I've had to give the organ up, is my hearing isn't good now. Those of you who know Burwell will know that the organ is high up at the back and the vicar's low down at the front. And even with the PA, it's not easy to hear. So I don't play the organ at Burwell anymore. I gave up when I was 70, one or two after that when people were ill or something. But it's quite amazing, really, that at 81 I've still got... The Lord has given me a reasonable singing voice. At my age, you know, so at least I can do that. So we're where I am now, really. Lots of church work looking after one or two. All the aunts and parents have died, of course. My life is tickling along, just... Well, really enjoying things at the moment, I think.
I must ask you. I've met Audrey.
Yes.
You haven't mentioned when you got married.
Married in 1967. Met Audrey at Pies, which is not unusual. There was a lot of that went on at Pies, and as I say, her mother lived at Swaffham Prior, which is again very near. We've been together now for 42, 43 years. Yeah, it's amazing how time goes. Oh, she was a secretary, by the way, a senior secretary. Yes, at Pies. That's where she ended up. She obviously started lower down the chain and worked her way up.
Did you just meet her in the office, or were there social occasions at Pi?
Met her in work, yes, yeah. And things went on from there. But as I say, that happened a lot in Pies, people meeting future wives and husbands. It's such a big place. Pies and Marshalls between them, you know, employ a vast number of people, as you know. Well, Pies have gone now. It's Phillips now, but it was just the same. It was a change in name, really, at that time. Mid-60s, we swapped from Pie to Phillips.
Could you perhaps describe a typical day, a working day in Pie around the time that you met your wife?
Yes. I think that was part of the time when I was away. I wasn't there all the time. As I say, I had periods when I was working with customers. A typical day would be getting... This is when we were married, of course. We'd go in together, obviously. And we wouldn't actually have much to do with each other during the day. We might have a meal together or something like that. But our work was so different from each other that we wouldn't have a lot, or virtually nothing, work-wise to talk about, apart from the odd thing, but not really. And so I was engineering like mad and she was secretarying like mad.
By engineering, were you working in a lab or an office?
Mainly an office in my job, although I was in and out of the labs all day long. Yes, I had my own desk and salesmen used to come and beg for me to do their quotes. And, that was life.
You've talked about a lot of different customers and systems that you've specified. Are there any Is there any particular one that you think I was really proud of that, or one that sticks out in your mind for any reason as being a particularly of particular significance to you in any way?
Well, there was quite a lot that were very interesting. I think probably the best one of the I won't name the customer as such, but let me just tell you that it involved planting 7 200-foot tyres from Potter's Bar up to somewhere in Norfolk. I won't go more than that, but you can imagine. These days there'd be a riot if you tried to put one tyre up that high, I think. Yes, that was interesting.
Was that the biggest job that you were involved in?
It was certainly one of them.
Perhaps I can ask what you would consider the most unusual job that you were involved in.
The most unusual job? Now, that needs some thinking about. Well, they're all done to some sort of specification, you see, and they all follow a pattern. I can't think of anything that was desperately different from the other jobs, really. I think the thing that most people would see and think about would be the aerial systems of the jobs, like the one I've told you about, all the towers, because that's what the public would see. The rest of it's just like a telly, really, a bit bigger.
Well, perhaps remember that people listening to this won't have worked at Pye.
No,
won't
indeed.
Won't actually know the system. So it would actually be useful if you could just describe the components and how they worked of one of these jobs that you were describing.
Well, I won't be components because that wasn't my business. I mean,
it'll be parts of the system.
It'll be the bits of the system. As I say, what it would be it would be transmitters and receivers supplying power to it, and the aerial systems, of course, which I've already mentioned. And that's it. I mean, there's nothing really particularly new about it. I mean, it's just the way they're put together. And some of the environments might be a bit tricky, you know. I mean, you have to do something where you're on top of a hill or something, you know. But it's really without going into technicalities, if you think of it as a much enlarged radio or television, you won't be far out.
So for those people who've never known a world without mobile phones, what were the systems used for? Why were they necessary?
Well, of course, mobile phones, everybody uses them now. In these days, before that, of course, the military and the police, that's how it started. Then you got the water boards and electricity boards coming in, and now everybody has them.
You were talking about your church life.
Yeah.
You said that you, I think it was seven different
Vicars.
Seven vicars, right. Could you maybe describe what church life was like in the early days compared to now and how things have changed?
Yes, I can certainly do that from my musical point of view. When I joined the choir, it was men only. And soon after that, we started taking ladies as well. But the real difference is in the type of music, because in those days it was very much more formalised, and the music was well known, but I have to say that I'm not an expert on this, so I'm speaking sort of out of the top of my head, really. But during the last 10 years, there's been a lot of modern church music made, invented, or whatever you call it. And some of it is good, and some of it, to my personal opinion, is personal, is not so good. But the young people today want modern music. And so in our church, we have to cater for both sorts. We have to cater for the traditional stuff and also the modern stuff, which we do.
And that's from the musical aspect. How about from the aspect of the role of the church within the Burwell community?
Well, that's got very much broader. Very much broader. We do an awful lot in the village itself. We've got our own little shop halfway down the causeway called Centrepiece. And we have... You really need to talk. So I'm a bit out of it because I'm no longer on the church council. I gave that up a few years back. But there's all sorts of things, some of which I didn't know existed, I have to admit. Catering every age, from very old to very young.
So you said you were on the church council?
I was for some years. Well, quite a few years, yeah.
What sort of activities did the council...
Well, they control what the church does, for instance. I mean, when we're now going through a revitalising phase of the building, doesn't involve me at all, but it involves a lot of the people on the council dealing with contractors and people who have to approve things you do in churches. And, you know, the diocesan people won't let us put anything outside the framework of the church because it's a lovely building, so everything has to be done inside. You know, it's that sort of thing. But as I say, I'm way out of that now, so I can't really say what goes on. But it's that sort of thing. And of course, looking after the money of the church. A big job for a big church like Burwell.
Now, how about the social aspects of the congregation?
Yeah, well, we have everything from the very old, as I was saying, where I play once a month the communion service, and the very young toddlers. We have toddlers' things. Yeah, and everything in between.
Has that changed from when you were...
Well, it's appeared, a lot of it, over the last 10 or 15 years sort of thing. Before then, half these things didn't exist. It has to attract the ongoing generation, you see.
We're sitting here in Mill Close, near to Stephen's Mill.
That's it, just round the corner.
What's your earliest recollection of the mill?
Well, it's always been there, of course. I really didn't have much to do with it until we moved here in 1967. We've just spent a large sum of money on refurbishing it. And it looks lovely now.
Did you ever see the mill when it was in operation?
I can't remember seeing it. It's a bit off the beaten track of the main village.
Well, you must have looked around the museum.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, the museum's lovely. Yes, that's very good. They're improving it all the time.
Are there any particular exhibits there that bring back memories for you?
Yes, I've even got my name mentioned on the board there from school days. And my brother and sister, who don't live near, incidentally.
You realise that's the first time you've mentioned having a brother and sister.
Yes, it's funny. I just thought that because they're further away, you see. They don't click so much. My brother lives near Norwich and my sister lives near Chelmsford. They're both married with families.
Are they older or younger?
They're younger than me. A few years, not much.